Good afternoon, Lauren.
Hey, thank you.
Why is the pink tax a phenomenon that occurs?
Look, I hate to say this, but it's largely because women keep purchasing pink products. So I think I don't want to victim blame, and I think there's a lot of cultural reasons as to why you have women making gender purchasing decisions for items that don't necessarily need to be gendered. But I think if the market simply decided we don't need pink razors, we don't need pink biros, we don't need any products, you know, generally most products can be gender neutral, if consumers didn't buy them, they wouldn't keep being manufactured. But they are, and that's because the audience validates the purchases.
And how does the pink tax affect the way people spend their money?
This is tricky. I think there'll be some people who realise that all, let's say, shavers work the same, and therefore they'll go into the supermarket and see that they'll, you know, sometimes the blue, i.e. male ones, will be cheaper and simply purchase those. I think on other occasions, though, there is still this theory, this assumption that products are different, that there is a different functionality of them. I think skincare is a good example where men's skincare products often have high doses of menthol in them. They smell fresher. Therefore, men think they're working differently on their skin. So in practice, even though we can sit here and criticise the existence of the pink tax, in practice people do make purchasing decisions based on them because of things such as marketing, because of what we're used to in terms of things like smell or appearance.
Yeah, definitely. How much more do you think women end up spending more than men as a result of the pink tax?
I think this is hard to determine. Some women, it will be negligible. They'll simply buy whatever's cheapest at the supermarket. For women who are more conscious about things like appearance, smell, etc., they're potentially paying more money for things like, you know, shampoos, razors, other kinds of toiletry items because of this so-called pink tax. I think in other areas such as haircuts, that's another common reference point for the pink tax, where women are charged more for haircuts. That's a difficult kind of concept to put a dollar figure on, because again, I, for example, have very long hair, and cutting my hair would be different than cutting a man who had shorter hair. So they're not an apples and apples comparison. So in that end of the pink tax end of the spectrum, I think it's difficult to put a dollar figure on it.
Yeah, that is an interesting point. I think as well, with some things, it is hard because you can't really determine a set price for all, as some things will differ.
Yeah, I think, for example, shirts. You know, if we think of a shirt, button-down shirt, they're going to be comparable in the sense that the cost of making a man's shirt compared to a woman's shirt is going to be the same number of buttons, etc. But once you start talking about things like fabric, let's say, you know, certain qualities of fabric, but that happens for both men and women. So there's not, you know, if we're looking at low-end price points, a cotton polyester blend, theoretically both shirts should be exactly the same price regardless of which gender it's being marketed as, because they're the same type of garment. But there are other types of products and services. Haircuts are one of those examples where there are so many variables that need to be stirred in. Simply calling it a pink tax doesn't really do justice to explaining all the intricacies of it.
Yeah, definitely. How do you think we get around this tax, though?
The way we get around it is by consumers informing themselves about their purchasing decisions. So, understanding that a product being either coloured pink or packaged in a more feminine way doesn't necessarily make this product better or more functional for your needs. So making choices is based on price, i.e. what's cheapest, but also realising that for a lot of products, they both work exactly the same, and therefore there's not an advantage to buying a gendered, or in this case a feminised version, that you can actually save quite a bit of money by not caring whether your deodorant smells like flowers.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's one of those things that's a little bit of a psychological factor. I know myself, I run towards anything that is pink, so it's a little bit hard to get away from that and kind of realise it's not necessarily any different from another product.
Absolutely, but there's also things that are personal taste. You know, I know, for example, that men's deodorants smell different to me. So there's no point me saying that, well, you know, they just function the same, because in practice, they don't feel the same. They don't feel the same because they don't smell the same, and therefore that's the difference. Now, you mentioned aesthetics in terms of your own preference for pink. There's lots of things that we're drawn to. And it may be because of social conditioning, but nonetheless, if you're buying, particularly if it's a luxury item, if you're buying it for purposes of feeling good, if you feel that you've made a compromised purchase and bought, you know, the opposite gender product as some sort of political statement or because it's cheaper, the functionality as a luxury item won't be there anymore because it doesn't feel as luxurious to you to use. Marketers know this, and that's why the products are often gendered.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I do think it's a really interesting topic, and thank you so much for coming on the show.
Anytime at all, Brooke. Thank you for having me.